Ladies and gentlemen, it is the final episode of the Sons of History podcast. And for the final episode, I want to have my good friend Alan Joaquim introduce the final one. Go ahead.
Well, you know, if you had given me some kind of a warning, I could have done something similar to the final episode of MASH. I was there in front of my TV, 1983, watching it. I had always been a devoted MASH fan, but, you know, I don't have the sign. I don't have the, you know, the stones set together to say goodbye. So we're just going to have to do our own. And I'm going to say that I don't, you know, this is not a goodbye or anything like that. This is just going to be a transition from going from the podcast. And I think we'll be concentrating more on films and reels and stuff like that. And we will discuss this trips. That'll be discussed throughout this this episode. But, you know, Dustin, I got to say that this has been a fantastic journey. I've enjoyed it very much. And, you know, I'm looking forward to many more years of doing other activities outside the podcast with you. So,
yeah, me too, man. And that's what this episode is about, is a little bit of a memory lane about the show. I mean, freaking 5 years in, man. We hit our 5-year anniversary on October of this year. Two episodes ago, we hit our 200th episode. So it's been a lot of fun. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not too late. It's never too late to subscribe. To subscribe to our YouTube channel. There's going to be so many more videos going up here very soon. Broken up clips from some of the great conversations that we've had over the years with some incredible historians. So you'll be able to check those out. We've got just stuff in the wings ready to be done. So yes, never too late to subscribe, at least to our YouTube channel. You can go ahead and do that. Now, if you're new to the show, go ahead and subscribe to our, you know, the Apple Podcast, Spotify, wherever you're listening. Go ahead and do that. While you're at it, because I know that you love us, and I know that you're going to miss us, leave us a nice 5-star rating and a glowing review. It doesn't even have to be about me. I'd like for it to, but it could be about Alan. Just
could
him.
Be about me. Yeah. You know, I'm not getting enough attention here, so.
I don't think you are.
No.
I don't think you are.
But that's all going to change. That's all going to change when these reels and these videos come out, so.
That's right. It's all going to be about you. Yeah, that's exactly. You know, here's what's interesting, man. We started this show 5 years ago. We had only met each other maybe a year prior. We hardly knew each other. And the way that we started off was somewhat comical. We started off in costumes. And I started off, I think, as Thomas Jefferson. And I think you started off as Thomas Paine. These are old video clips that you can go check out on our YouTube channel. Go to the very beginning. I was also George Washington, and you were, who was the other guy?
That was John Adams.
You were John Adams. Yeah. But the other guy that was,
also I was Joseph Reed.
Joseph Reed. That's who Joseph I was Reed. Trying to think of. Yeah. And so,
you know, had I really sat and thought about it, because Joseph Reed was a bit of an ass. So, you know, not sure I wanted to play his part, but there we are.
Yeah, but you played it very well. And really, you just played yourself. So that's what was, yeah, that's what was pretty neat. It just, sometimes you get to play yourself.
Yes. Yes. So, yeah, that was fun. But I got to tell you that the whole idea, you know, I know we talked about doing costumes. We were going to do 4 different, you know, every one per season. We were going to try something new. But, you know, that first season wore me out. And my inability to memorize lines, I know, irritated you to no end.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that was,
you know, but you're the one who's a, you were what, an actor or something?
Yeah, look, man, I had my acting chops. I minored in theater in college. I did all that stuff, wrote a number of scripts, different things like that. I tell you what, you misremembering your lines or not getting your lines right was created some very funny moments. So a lot of good laughs. Yeah, I got to the point where we had a couple of crew members that fell out pretty quick. One was Nick. He went on to the Marines, so he had a very good excuse for having to leave. But I tell you what, it did. One, it got us started. Two, it forced me to start learning how to video edit, because I didn't know how. And when our initial video editor, bowed out unceremoniously, well, I was like, hey, you know, we've got all of these shots. We've got all these clips. We got to do something. We got to put them together. And so I learned how to do video editing. And I tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, that is one of the most important things to understand about doing a project, regardless of what it is. And if it's something that you're interested in, but you don't think that you're qualified for, you don't know, it's like they say, if you want to learn something, write a book about it. And that's more or less what it is just get started. Just do it. That's exactly what Alan and I did. I was passionate about history, although my knowledge on it was infinitesimal. I did not mean to say infinitesimal. We'll move on. And I hooked up with Alan, whose knowledge on history is light years ahead of tons of people I know, including the historians that we have on this show. And so connecting with him, getting started, and I'll tell you how we transition from doing those videos to just doing the podcast. And you remember that at your place, opening up my laptop, it's got a speaker in it, installed in it. And we just spoke into the laptop. That's how we got started. And I tell you what, man, It is one of those, like you start off at the bottom, but you just keep going because you enjoy it so much. And one, you enjoy the subject so much, but two, you enjoy the company of the person that you're doing it with. And that's how I've felt about it from the get-go up until now.
I appreciate the kind words. Here's what I am going to say, though, is that without you, there would not have been a show. You know, Dustin interviewed with my then wife, and for a job. And when Dustin, you know, she asked him, you know, what are your interests, and he mentioned that he's a published author. He wrote a book. And that he's a big history fan. And so she told him, you need to meet my husband. And she contacted me and said, she goes, you need to meet this guy, Dustin. This is his phone number. And, you know, and at the time I was like going, all right, I mean, I don't know this guy. This will be kind of weird. So, we got in touch with each other and we met, I believe, was it breakfast that one time at that one place not too far from the agency that we met?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we sat and we talked about, you know, what we thought about history. And we decided that, you know, we wanted to do an enterprise together, which is, you know, at first I think it was going to be just audio. But then we decided, let's do video, too. Let's do the acting where the American Revolution, we dress up as the founding fathers. You know, Dustin and I, we were both very much alarmed with history, with what was going on, say, in this country, going on in the West, where history was being forgotten, you know. And I remember, I'm sure I've mentioned this numerous times, I asked this guy who was in the military if he knew who Jimmy Doolittle was, and he didn't know. And I thought, you know, that cannot be, that someone like Jimmy Doolittle and his mission with all the guys, what they did, that has to be remembered. We cannot forget that. And, you know, seeing statues all over the country being destroyed, not just Confederate. And I remember predicting they're not going to stop on the Confederate. They're going to move on to anybody and anything that they did not approve of for any reason whatsoever, because they didn't live up to the standards that we supposedly have today. And, you know, and Dustin and I made it our mission to talk about the things in history that are not being discussed. You know, why did certain things happen? Why did the Boston Tea Party happen? It wasn't just destruction of tea. There was a huge story behind why it happened. And if you look at it from that point of view, you'll realize, you know, it was a very reasonable response to tyranny that was, or the tyrannical government of the royal government of Massachusetts at the time. So we made it our mission to tell the story. You know, there's enough stories out there that are false or misleading. And it was time to tell the other side, especially with the way wokeness was spreading in this country, hatred of Western civilization, shame of being an American. And, you know, I hope we did a good job. The jury's still out on that one. We still have a ways to go. And that's one of the reasons why we're not stopping. We're going to continue. We're just going to do things from we're going to use different methods to get the story out. Not only because we love history, but we just love, the stories behind it, and we also want to correct the false narratives that are out there.
Yeah, we wanted to help people understand that, like, there's the common theme of history repeats itself, or Mark Twain's, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. Like, you see all these things, like, these things just don't happen by happenstance. These things, good, bad, otherwise, happen because we are all human. We all have these human traits in us that cause us to make certain decisions. And the more powerful that we are, well, the more apt we are to make impactful decisions on other people's lives. And you better pray to God that whoever is making those decisions has the right moral, has the right character in them. And that's sort of what we wanted to discuss. And one of the things that always stood out to me during our years of doing this show was how much the world is a reflection of what took place in 1919 after World War I. How the way that we see the world today is really, it really traces heavily back to post-World War I. And one of my concerns was, we always look at World War II because it was a more cataclysmic war. There were more deaths, and then you have the atomic bomb. But it's like, if you really want to understand the world as it is in the 20th century, you need to look at World War I and Paris and 1919. And it's one of those topics that is so rarely discussed among people in general, but especially in your high schools. In your high, like, they want to jump from the Civil War over to World War II. It's like, man, if you don't catch on to what's happening in between there, and then also not understanding the Bill of Rights, not understanding the Constitution, not understanding the difference between, you know, democracy and a republic, like a pure democracy and a republic, and the whole the misunderstanding of what we are, what our form of government is so alarming. And people will constantly say, look, Dustin, republicanism is a form of democracy. And yes, it is. But to say that republicanism is democracy, like the one form of government that our founders feared almost the most, which was a pure democracy, the problem it's like what you said, the things that are not being discussed, that sometimes is more dangerous than the things that are being discussed. When you are leaving things out almost on purpose to where there's that deception that people will make, they will come to their own conclusions and it'll be the wrong conclusion. Oh, we're a majority rule country. We're a democracy. And it's like, if you don't understand exactly how this system works, you're going to hate it because you don't understand it. And you'll think that it's unfair when in fact, it's the complete opposite. And that's one of the things that we really wanted to address with our podcast, among so many other things. And I hope that, like what you said, I hope that we did accomplish that. And I do want to say this, because, you know, you and I are unapologetically, we're Christian. You're more conservative than I am. But we are both in the conservative camp. And people, you know, on comments or whatever, or people will make the accusation that it's like, oh, you guys are just conservative. So if you go through the list of guests that we've had on our show, I would surmise that a majority of the guests that we've had on our show are on the left. They are liberal Democrats or whatever. Like I could go down. I would say 50-50, 60-40 in favor of the, so that's what I really appreciated about our show, is that we could have people on our podcast who are on the opposite side of the political spectrum, and we could have a dynamic, wonderful, engaging, and intelligent conversation without people, you know, you come across like, oh, we're going to have this guy on the show. And you know, this person is, you know, who's hosting is on the left and they're having a conservative come on, and you know exactly what's going to happen. It's going to be a shout fest. And the other way around, somebody on the right, we're going to have this person on and they're on the left, and you know what's going to happen. It's going to blow up, and it's absurd. And a lot of times they do that just for the clicks and the views. You and I will champion us for the fact that we never did that. We wanted to have a good, solid conversation. And whenever we had questions about maybe that person's motive, or why they address certain things a certain way, or how they feel about what's going on in the world today, we didn't shy away from some hard questions. And I appreciated that about our show.
Yeah, I'll correct you on one part. I don't think I'm more conservative than you. I think I'm more of a libertarian conservative than you.
I think you're more conservative than I am.
We'd have to go point by point on that one. But yeah, you're right. We did have some guests that thought differently than we did. And I remember one of them. You know, we didn't want in any way to present it as a gotcha show, like, or a gotcha question. Ah, I'm hitting my.
Well, don't do that, because that only makes it so much. When you do that, see, that's one of the things. When you don't edit your own stuff, you have no idea the sound that's coming through that microphone.
All right. Well, just put it on our blooper part. So
I'll just bleep all those scratch sounds and bump sounds.
Yeah,
out.
Yes, please do. So now what I was going to say, there was one gentleman in particular. I remember that he wrote a history book, and I don't remember what the question was about, but I presented it in a way where I said, okay, I do take issue with one of the things that you stated in your book. And I think it was the guy from New Jersey. I'm not sure. But I said to him that this is how I felt about so-and-so. And we've had guests who corrected us or stated a differing opinion. Like the gentleman who wrote about Assyria, when I mentioned Samuel, he politely was saying, listen, I don't want to, you know, crap on your parade in regards to the Bible, but Samuel is just a, I don't know if he said it was a myth or didn't happen or whatever it is that he said. But I didn't take it as something to be offended by. I like having these types of conversations because that's how you learn. You can't have an echo chamber. We had one gentleman who was one of our greatest guest that we had. He's a best-selling author. I went and visited his home, and we sat and we talked, and you know, he made me some tea or something like that. I don't remember what it was. It was real nice. We were sitting outside on his porch in Savannah, Georgia, and we were just sitting talking, and he presented his viewpoint about about history and the direction history is going. And I remember when he stated it, I was not too thrilled by what he said, but you know, it's his opinion. It's how he looked at things. I was in his home. I certainly was not going to sit and argue with him there, but I listened to him, and I, you know, okay. And we still invited him. I believe that he was still a guest. He was a guest on our show another time after that. So, but that's how you do it. And you don't have to, at least we didn't, we didn't behave like, I'm not going to say when, you know, as Biden, when Biden does a press conference where the reporters suddenly become little timid deers who don't want to, you know, upset Biden in any way. But say when Trump was president, how the reporters would just, you know, the way they stood up and started throwing questions, you know, to try to. Well, you saw some of the videos. I mean,
it was a combination.
I'm kind of at a loss at words, but you know, we did not do either. We weren't like the way they treated Biden or the way they treated Trump. We were kind of in between. When we had a disagreement, you know, we told them, and you know, but we wanted the authors to tell us what they thought. You know, let them have their say, because we've got ample opportunity to get, you know, to talk and say what we have to. But, you know, we have, what, 30 to 45 minutes to maybe 60 minutes to hear what they have to say. And let them speak, let them have their say, and then we can discuss it afterwards.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that we never wanted to do was, and I say, you know, we have people on the left or on the right. Like, I took a very staunch approach or a stance against having anybody too far to the left or too far to the right, too far to the right on the show. Because I think, one, we are living in an era where everything is becoming politicized. And that was one of the things that I did not want to have happen on the show, is to turn something into just political mayhem, just political speak. That's all it was going to be. It was like, well, the left this or the right that. And it's like, We're talking about history, and people can learn from what we're talking about and then apply it to whatever it is that they want to. I remember one comment, and it was, you know, we've had a lot of great comments and we've had a lot of stupid comments, but there was one. It was after we had had a conversation with Josiah Osgood. He's the classics professor over at Georgetown, I think. And we've had him on a couple of times. Love having that guy on the show. And we talked about more or less the civil war that broke out between, it was the first time we talked about the Catalina conspiracy, right? And somebody commented on how could you not ask about the January 6th, as they said, insurrection? How could you not talk about Trump? This show is blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that is exactly what we don't want to do. If you want on your own to tie in that rhetoric or that viewpoint, that's strictly up to you. But we were talking about something that took place over 2,000 years ago. We're not here to tie it in to what's going on in the White House and Congress today. You know, we're not that. That was never the shtick. The shtick was what happened at that period in time, and why do you think it happened? And if you wanted to, you know, as a viewer or as a listener, come to your own conclusions about, like, wow, that's the point. That was the point of the show. The point of the show was, yes, you see, it doesn't change over the millennia. Like, it doesn't change. Like, we're the same. That's the only thing that changes is the technology. And so to that point, that's why it was like, there was no point in bringing in the politics. It's everywhere. And this was not a safe haven, but it was a place where we weren't just going to take everything that happened in history and tie it into modern politics.
Well, you know, when we had Joe Wolverton, I remember that he was telling us about what the Constitution was, and I don't remember specifically what it was, but I remember at one point, I think you stopped. Yeah, I don't know if you stopped him, but you're like, "Listen, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole.
Yeah,
let's stick with a certain subject." I wanted to hear what he had to say, but I do understand what you were. I understand what you were trying to get at. I know that I ran into that guy, and I can't remember his name. He he's real political. The guy from India, he was.
Yeah.
God, why do I forget his name all of a sudden? Dinesh D'Souza.
Dinesh, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, hey, let's get Dinesh D'Souza. I have his information. I talked with him about being on our show. But yeah, I do remember you saying, no, we don't want Dinesh. He's too political. Be a good conversation to have with him, but not so much on our podcast. So, and, you know, I think we did a pretty good job on getting these guys and these ladies on our show to explain a few things. For instance, the gentleman that we had regarding Pétain, I asked him, why did Pétain betray, or why was he a collaborator? You know, and I threw a lot of questions at him. I said, was it for this reason? Was it for this? Was it for that? Because, you know, he specialized in Pétain. And I'm curious as to know, why did he do the things that he did, you know? I wrote an article for the Epoch Times about the Boston Tea Party. The article that I wrote wasn't about the Tea Party itself. It was about what led up to the Tea Party. Why did it happen? You know, can you sit there and say that it's okay to destroy tea in 1773, but today you can't, you can look at BLM or Antifa and say, nope, you can't do that. You know, BLM and Antifa, if they don't know the history of what happened, they're going to say, well, you know, if the founding fathers went and destroyed tea back, you know, 250 years ago, then certainly we have a right to destroy businesses and courthouses and whatnot. And we're like, no, that's not how it worked. That's not what happened. The Boston Tea Party was a targeted destruction. Businesses were not destroyed. Homes were not destroyed. The ship was not destroyed. No one was attacked. There was a reason why they went after the tea, and only the tea was destroyed. The tea and one padlock, and that's it. And if you don't know the history of it, you will say, if they could do this, then we can do this. And that's why I'm glad we got these, well, you got most of these authors to explain things so that we would have a better understanding of why things happened the way they did. And another thing that you need to understand also is when we talk about like what democracy is, you know, our founding fathers, they read the classics. And I'm quite certain that they read the history of the Peloponnesian War and what a pure democracy can do to a country. You know, in a pure democracy, if 55 or 60% vote to have you kicked out for no reason whatsoever, just, you know, like Socrates, a majority voted to have him executed. Without any type of constitutional backed rights, you know, why are we a constitutional republic or a republic that uses a constitution rather than a pure democracy? It's for that very reason. They knew that a democracy could lead to the tyranny of the majority. And so if, you know, I'll watch Bill Maher, and Bill Maher will sit and get upset at politicians who proclaim that we are not a democracy. Well, yeah, we're not. And if Bill Maher understood what that meant, he wouldn't make the stupid comments that he's making. I like a lot of what he's saying, but when he gets pissed off because politicians say we're not a democracy, they're right. We're not a democracy. And if you knew why, if you knew the history of it, you wouldn't ridicule those who state that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's more complicated than... And the complication allows for security. That's the thing. It's broken up so beautifully. And there are people, sadly, specifically on the left, who want to consolidate power in a simplified manner. Just for the sake of mere simplicity. And it's like, dude, if you do that, you don't understand why the Republican form of government was built in the first place. It was to offset all of those dangers. And when you say, well, it would be just a lot easier. And it's like, well, yeah, it would be a lot easier if we had a king or a tyrant who could just willy-nilly sign things into law or make proclamations and then we all do them. It would be easier as far as what's the fastest route, A to B, like a straight line. Yeah, it's easier. It's faster. Doesn't mean it's better. Does not mean it's better. And typically, as we have found out over the course of these 5 years of conversations over the past 3,000 years, yeah, more often than not, it's not better.
Well, like the Electoral College, if they understood why the Electoral College system was created, if they knew the history of it, if you knew the reason behind it, people would stop saying we need to get rid of it. We need to have a national vote. You know, the United States was not created as one nation. It wasn't. It was created as 13 different nations, and they created a confederacy so that, you know, we can take care of external problems, and which I've likened to as a homeowners association. You know, the homeowners association doesn't tell you how to run your affairs inside your home. Homeowners association has certain set of rules, enumerated rules that state this is what we're going to do. And that's what the Constitution was. The Constitution was like a homeowners association. It was like a contract between a homeowners association and the 13 families who lived within the community. And, you know, each household would run its own affairs. But the homeowners association was meant to do only certain things, like, you know, mow the lawn on the outer part of the perimeter. Build a defense, build a fence or a wall for defense. Sidewalks to get from one state to get from one household to another. Streets, stuff like that. That's all it was meant for. And it's turned into this monstrosity. And if people knew their history, they would be crying foul. They'd be saying, wait a minute, you know, this is not how it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be certain set of rules that kept them at bay. But because we don't know our history, because we don't read the books that the founding fathers read, you know, we're making horrible mistakes right now.
Which is true. And we've done that a couple of times as far as like books to read. We've done episodes on what books. Actually, I think we did that during this season, this sixth season. Who were your favorite guests? I'm going to go through a few of mine, but think about who your favorite guests that we had on the show were. I'm going to leave one off because I know you're going to choose it. Here's a few of mine. Marguerite Fox. She's considered the sixth best writer to ever come through the New York Times. She was a hoot. Like, she was so fun to talk to. She did the book on the World War I story, The Confidence Men, where they sort of played this trick on their captors out in, I want to say out in Turkey, where they were being held by the Ottomans, and use a fake Ouija board and all that stuff, and were able to escape over the it was just a really fun conversation. We had that early on, I think about 3 or 4 seasons ago. And we had, let's see, Arthur Herman is one of my favorite historians. And I had read his book on how the Scots invented the modern world before I went over to Scotland a few years ago. And I just loved it. I loved his work. And we got him on the show to talk about his book on the Vikings. That was a huge plus, huge win for me. I loved having that guy on. Wilfred McClay, he was a fun, like, he was just... He's one of those people that, one, you want to have a conversation with, and two, you just want to hug because he just seems like such a nice gentleman. Loved having him on the show. I mentioned the Josiah Osgood. We had him on the show twice to talk about ancient Rome. Those were great conversations. And of course, like this year, we had Don Holloway on for the third time. He's always a lot of fun. A lot of good laughs with him and Michael Livingston with Agincourt and Crecy. Those battles, 100 Years Wars battles. He was a lot of fun. He was always looking forward to having a conversation with us, which was really cool. So was Don. And then this last one that we had with Julian Jackson, that, like I've been saying, I really couldn't have asked for a better guest for our last guest on the show. So who would you say are some of your top ones?
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one because, you know, there were so many of them that I really enjoyed having. You know, the ones who I struck friendships with, there was Jody. You know, what's funny is is it Jody Ginn? I can't even remember his last name. I just remember, we call him Jody, huh?
Jody Edward Ginn, yeah.
Okay. Joe Wolverton, Stephen Harden, Wesley Odom. Wesley Odom had me in his home. I stayed with Wesley Odom for a few days and then went back again to spend time with them for his wedding. Got to meet him and Mike Bunn when I was driving out into doing the stories on the Bernardo de Galvez and the Spanish campaign to kick the British out during the Revolutionary War. Definitely Alex Kershaw. I loved him.
Yeah, he was our breakthrough, man. He was the guy that you said, I'm going to see if I can get him on the show. That was the one that broke the seal for us to start. That sort of put us on the map to say, hey, we've had New York Times bestselling author Alex Kershaw on the show. And really, honestly, that gave us some credence for people to be like, oh, he's been on the show? Okay, yeah, I'll be with y'all. So yeah, it was a huge, huge step.
He was a huge step. He was definitely, I struck up friendships, with Alan Gaff. I love Alan Gaff.
Yeah.
I've actually had some conversations with him over the phone. Mary Graybar.
Yep.
Dr. Mary Graybar. I've been talked to her on the phone. I've gotten her advice about stuff. I mentioned Joe Wolverton.
Mm-hmm.
Went and visited him when I was in Arizona. So, God, you know, there have been so many people that we've had that I have really enjoyed talking to. There was that one, God, it's going to kill me what his name was. He wrote the book on Benedict Arnold. He's a best-selling author.
Yeah, Stephen Brumwell.
Stephen Brumwell, thank you. So, yeah, and a lot of Mark Boonstra. I loved having Mark Boonstra. I think, all these folks, we became Facebook friends, and I still stay in touch with some of them. Oh, here's another one. The Frederick Douglass guy. John W. McCaskill, I think you had dinner with him or something. You met him in D.C. or New York. I don't remember which one it was. Learned so much from that guy. Now, that one lady, the Sargon?
Yeah, Batya?
Yes.
I know. You got a crush.
I had a crush. I'm sorry. I had a crush on her. And then I see her later on Bill Maher's show, which was kind of funny. So, yeah, there was just so many folks. And so, you know, there we go. And I know if I'm missing somebody, if there was somebody I forgot to mention, I do apologize because I didn't
know.
There's
like well over, 50, 60, probably close to 70 guests. These are historians, best-selling authors, just thinkers in general, like influence, like a Joe Wolverton type. Where he's written books.
Ken Wise is we've had
he's
him.
He's a judge, yeah.
Didn't he and Stephen Harding, I think they came on.
Yep.
Together. So,
Yeah, we had my old English professor who now has taken off, exponentially. Dr. Donnell Olson. He was a lot of fun to chat with, and I don't want to leave him out because he's probably going to watch this episode, and I don't want him to think that, whatever, Donnell, we loved having you. Okay. Don't ever think otherwise. No, man. I want to say that I personally learned a ton doing this show. I learned so much about, one, when we started off at the very beginning doing the dress up stuff, I learned so much about the creation of the Declaration, and the Constitution, going through the Federalist Papers, which was like, those were videos that we never ended up doing, like the Federalist Papers. But I learned so much, and then going into, you know, your World War One, there was so much. Like I said, my understanding of history was infinitesimal. Is that the correct word, infinitesimal, like a small amount, or is that a lot?
No, infinitesimal is a lot. Yeah, that's why I was like, I didn't want to correct you on that one, but like infinity?
Yeah, I know. Like, what am I thinking?
Like, well, like you were saying like your history, your knowledge on history was beyond infinity. And I was like going, wow, he sure is pretty high on himself. But, you know.
Hey, we're going to have to redo this whole show. Because that was a lot.
No, we're not.
Yeah, I know. No,
we already did that once or twice before.
Yeah, infinitesimal is not the word. What word am I looking for? Small,
limited,
tiny,
I don't
limited.
Know, limited.
Very non-existent, almost.
I remember Michael Walsh, who was also one of our guests, who I loved his books. Michael Walsh stated, if you want to become an expert on something, write a book on it. Because there were a lot of things, there were a lot of details that I didn't even know. And, you know, when you do the research, I found a hell of a lot more information that I was like going, wow, I didn't even know this. So,
well, ladies and gentlemen, it's not infinitesimal. It's the complete opposite. But I have learned so much. And boy, I'm going to have to go back and rephrase that word. I'm gonna have to do something, because that's hilarious, man. No, yeah, you should have... You should have said, whoa, 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 whoa. Let's rein it in, infinitesimal.
Well, another book I read was Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. And one of the things he says is, don't publicly correct somebody.
Yeah.
So, you know,
do it in
it's
private.
only because you said something, I thought, okay, I'm, you know.
Hey, I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's okay to insult someone privately, but just not publicly.
That's
true. If you insult them privately, they will thank you for it.
Yeah.
The wisdom of Benjamin Franklin.
That's, yes, exactly. Yeah, do it in private. Well, now we don't have to do it in private. This is very public and brutal, in the words of Bruce Willis on The Jackal. But no, I just want to say that I've learned a ton. It has turned into a bit of a career for me now, with the Epoch Times, writing so much on history. And I am able to pull from a vast, knowledge base from our show, which has been a huge, huge blessing. I know that we've got future plans. We mentioned, wanting to do like video projects and different things like that. You know, maybe even, you know, starting a podcast individually. That's my plan, probably in a year or so. Maybe like jumping into another project. But the banner of the Sons of History will remain alive and well. We're going to stay busy. And I wrote a farewell thing. Did you happen to see that on our social media?
No. No. Hey, before I forget, and again, he's going to kick my ass. Daniel, the
Daniel Flores?
Yes. Yes. Yes, Daniel Flores.
How is it that I'm always able to, like, you know, but you can't help me with infinitesimal?
Yeah, I know. Hey, listen, when you get to my age and you can remember the things that I remember, you know, then you can brag about it and all that. But yeah, Daniel Flores wrote a book about his time. I think it was called My Something in Heaven, My Piece of Heaven, or... Oh, Daniel, sorry, man. But I'm going to talk about you, Daniel. He wrote a book about something, My Something Heaven. It was about his time when he was a Apache pilot in Afghanistan. They did a movie on it, and he put my name in there. He credited me. So Daniel Flores, I got to throw his name. But yeah, if you watch the movie, something, I think it was called Above the Best. Yeah, you'll see my name when they scroll and they do all the credits. There's my name in there.
I'll tell you what, speaking of credits, Danelle Olson in his latest book on the War on Terror, Gothic War on Terror, he credited me. He put me in the acknowledgments. Really? Like a couple of sentences. Very flattering. Very flattering.
Yeah, Alan Gaff has got me. He had me reading his work, and Stephen Harding had me reading his. I was editing Stephen Harding's book on the Runaway Scrape, but after a while, I had to stop. And I feel bad about it, but I had to stop because there were some issues going on with my mom and a few other things that happened in my life, and I just ran out of time to do anything.
Well, I tell you what, Alan Gaff has sent me stuff on his Rogers Hornsby piece. I haven't even had time to look at it. I'm very much looking forward to it, but I myself haven't had time. But that's the beautiful thing, is like these guys who are like historians, independent historians, whatever, like we've connected and we've built these friendships, relationships, and in the words of Uncle Leo, like equals, Jerry. Do you remember that episode?
No, not that.
Wait, Uncle Leo is talking about his nephew.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I remember that. But he talked about his nephew all the time.
Jerry, they're like equals. They're equals.
Yes. Well, you know what? What you need to do is find that photo of us having dinner with Jody Ginn, Stephen Harding, and that
Denton Florian.
Denton Florian.
Yeah.
Yes. We sat together like equals.
Like equals, Jerry. Like equals.
What's that author? What's that writer for the Epoch Times? Philip. His last name was Philip.
Yeah, Joshua Philip.
Joshua Philip.
We had dinner. Equals.
Like equals.
Like equals. It's a beautiful thing, man. It's a beautiful thing.
Yes, it is. You know, when I was in that, this was in the 90s, I was in that bookstore. This was over on Shepherd Drive. The bookstore's not there anymore. It's now some grocery store. But I was in there, and I see this book called The Texian Iliad. And, started reading it. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. Bought it. Had no idea that I'd end up having dinner with him about 20 years later.
Isn't that something, man?
Yeah.
That is something. I will say this, and I've been trying to say it for a little bit, but starting up this podcast has been one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life because of all that came from it. Not just, obviously, our friendship, but two, the people that I've been able to meet and talk to, the knowledge that I have gained, and, you know, the career that has sort of spawned out of this, it has been, honestly, it's been a life-changing decision for me. And I know you said that it wouldn't have been, like, the Sons of History wouldn't have been without me. And this is true. But equally so, it would not have been without you. I would have said, well, that would have been neat to do, but I don't know enough nearly at all about history in order to do a show about history. And without you, I would not even have thought twice about starting a show. So it is and always has been a very 50-50 enterprise between you and I. Now, did I do most of the heavy lifting? Look, let's just call it what it is. Let's call a spade a spade. Let's call a spade a spade.
I know, and I've admitted that you have done a majority of the work, like 90% of putting all the stuff together. And I do give you credit for that. You know, I had I have a day job. You know, if this enterprise made us money, we don't do this for money. We do this because we love it. If this enterprise made us money, then we would be doing this full time and I could be a lot more involved. But, you know, artists are starving for a reason. If they don't do their day job, and I have a day job, and, you know, and it wears me out. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm worn out and I'm plopped on the couch. When I'm working here at home, plopped on the couch, and I will grab a book to read, and then, you know, and I'll take a nap, and then I'll go work out, and while I'm doing cardio, I'm reading a history book, you know, and then I come home and I plop on the couch again and I watch a Blu-ray. So, you know, and then I have to go visit my mom. I have to go take care of my mom. God bless her. And then I need my social life. So it's been difficult in doing the things that you do because you...
And you need to go get a haircut, right?
My haircut? Well, I mean, yeah. Yeah, I got to get...
I mean,
I don't get a haircut, my hair
you,
comes
you
out.
You need to go get a haircut even if it's in the middle of an episode, you know, whatever.
You know,
to hell with you. And
you set
that
you
horse
set
that
us
you...
Up.
No, I said nothing. I said nothing of the kind. You son of a bee sting, you had the list for as long as I did. And that was on there for a coon's age. So
okay. We had him
there
planned.
There is no defense for you. There is no defense for you.
Oh, yes. Yes, there is. We had him planned earlier, and I set up my haircut appointment. I moved it, and then We did not have him set up earlier.
No, we did not have him set up earlier. We had him set up maybe 2 months prior, and then we had to reschedule. Now, if you want to play that card, I will show pocket aces, my friend.
You know, I have it on my camera. I still have it where we were going, okay, have you heard from him? Have you heard from him? And we didn't hear from him.
Bro, that was 2 months prior to the moment where you pulled that stunt, which I could have slit your throat over. But you know what? Well, I'm over it. And now good. If I see you in person ever again, I'm going to smash that face.
Why'd you bring it up?
Hey, look, it's called a dig for the final episode. I will say this, in all honesty, as often as we bicker and we banter, and sometimes it is my personal frustration coming out, I will say this, my life personally has been greatly enriched by having you as a friend and having you as, I am not anticipating getting choked up over here, but as having you as a co-host for this show, my life has been thoroughly enriched. You've taught me a ton of stuff about history. And you've also taught me a ton of stuff about friendship too. And I want to say thank you for spending these 5 years with me, being patient with me, putting up with my my yelling, my insults. But I will say this, my friend, I love you very much. You have become a cousin, a brother type of, you know, figure. And I look forward to whether it's doing shows together, whether it's doing videos, whether it's just hanging out and having a beer. I look forward to many more years of our friendship.
I'm going to say likewise, my friend. My life has been enriched infinitesimally or whatever.
So what do you mean? Like very little or a whole lot?
Where's my thesaurus?
Exactly.
Infinitesimally. My life has been my life.
Now I'm wondering if you're meaning my version, which is like a very little bit, or the actual definition.
Our friendship has been breathtaking.
What does he mean by that?
No, my life has been greatly enriched to the moon and back. You know, I I feel like, you know, all the years that I've been reading, all the material, and, you know, if something were to happen to me today, I can at least say we did something. We did something. We did, you know, God gives us talents that he wants us to use and he wants us to display. And, you know, and that's, for me, that's what this was about. This was a way for me to fulfill, you know, what God wants us to do. God wants us to not waste our talents. And so, you know, this has been kind of like almost a religious experience in that manner, because I didn't just sit on all the knowledge. We did something about it, and you likewise, and you know, the friendship that we had. When in the summer of 2019, I went through I don't want to discuss what it was, but the summer of 2019 was probably the worst summer of my life, and you stood there with me. You let me cry on your shoulder. And I'll never forget that. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
How could I forget? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So you were there for me, and I greatly appreciate that. And I love you, man. I love you as a brother. And I'm looking forward to some of the things that we're going to be doing in the future. You and I are going to be taking trips together, and we're going to be filming. We're going to be looking at battlefields. We're going to be looking at historical sites. And then we're going to share them with our fans and our family and our friends and all our viewers. There's a lot to learn. And we, you know, we're going to use that friendship that we have, that bond that we have, to benefit everybody else out there. And I hope that's how our viewers look at it. And I appreciate the hell out of you. So there you go. That's my take on that.
It's a beautiful way to end the podcast. And I will say, you know what? I'm gonna read this just in case people didn't see it on our social media. Today we record the final episode of our podcast. 6 seasons, 5 years. 200 plus episodes, best-selling authors, award-winning historians, guests from across America, France, the UK, and the Republic of Ireland. We have made so many friends and have been honored by our guests and our listeners. Our goal was always to make learning history a fun experience. Those of you who put up with our bantering and bickering, we thank you. It was always part of the show, just in case you thought otherwise. We always warned our guests before recording that we might start digging at each other and not to be alarmed. We hope that all of you who listened learned something, whether it be about the ancient Assyrians, the Greco-Persian War, the fall of the Roman Republic, the Roman Empire, the Vikings, the Hundred Years' War, Christopher Columbus, the American Revolution, the French Revolution, colonialism, slavery, the U.S. Constitution and the Republican form of government, the expansion of the American West, the Gilded Age, World War I, the interwar years, World War II, the Cold War, the fall of communism, and everything in between. Our podcast will remain available on the various platforms and on our YouTube channel, so you can always revisit the many subjects and encounter again the various guests who've held from places like Harvard, Yale, Georgetown, University of Virginia, Hillsdale College, the University of Nebraska, the Hudson Institute, the American Enterprise Institute, and all those independent historians who have dedicated decades of their lives to the pursuit of history and truth. We hope that we might have been even the slightest bit of an inspiration for you to become interested in history and to discover how the world works and how its inner workings are far more complicated than we might credit it. To all of you who have listened and will listen in the future, we give you our heartfelt thanks. Alan Joachim and Dustin Bass, the Sons of History. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we thank you, and we will not be speaking with you next week. All the best to you, my friend. Take care of yourself.
You too, my friend. Take care. Love you.